What's good, y'all? This is Breeze Brewing from the Mighty Juggernauts. And make sure you subscribe and download the podcast, Library Rap, the hip-hop interviews with Tim Einenkel, hip-hop journalism on the highest level.
Yeah, well, what's up? It's your boy, Joel Ortiz, and I want everybody to make sure that they subscribe and download the podcast, Library Rap, the hip-hop interviews with Tim Einenkel. Yo, Tim, I hope all is well. You my guy. I know these interviews are not interviews. They're actually conversations, and I appreciate them all. Yeah, well.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Ice-T. I want you to do something for me. Make sure you download and subscribe Library Rap, the hip-hop interviews with Tim Einenkel. It is official, all right? Stop playing. Download and subscribe. Library Rap, the hip-hop interviews with Tim Einenkel. It's cold.
Yo, Chuck, what's the move, man? I was on my way up here to the studio, you know what I'm saying? And this brother stopped me and asked me, yo, what's up with that brother Chucky D? He swear he nice. I said, yo, the brother don't swear he nice. He knows he's nice, you know what I'm saying? So, Chuck, I got a feeling you turning into a public enemy, man. Now, remember that line you was kicking to me on the way out to L.A. Lounge in Queens while we was in the car on our way to the shop? Well, yo, right now, kick the bass for them brothers and let them know
what goes on. Rolling Stones of the rap game, not bragging. Look bigger than Jagger, not sagging. Brother backwards, I'ma leave it at that.
Public Enemy frontman, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductee, hip-hop legend, Roosevelt Long Island's own Chuck D, joins me today on the library on rapstation.com. Thanks for joining me, Chuck.
Yo, what's up, Tim? And you are in Roosevelt Long Island, so it's really great to be on the library and doing such an incredible, fine job.
I want to start with what's obviously been in the news lately is you've been very vocal about your problems with the use of the N-word in rap. Some defenders of the use of the word point to the idea that it's used in the context of artistic expression. Even Russell Simmons said on Hot 97, it's the voice of the youth, and they're just kind of channeling what's the voice of the youth. So I'm wondering, do you want it to ban the word altogether, or are you just, or is there any sort of artistic expression that the word can be used?
Every word has its context. You can't ban a word. But once you start to say that in any kind of public forum, that the word all of a sudden becomes a one-word anthem for a genre, a culture, and a people, and every other situation comparatively can't be said, there's an issue and there's a problem there. You know, behind the word, you have to figure out what council has endorsed and financed and branded this as marketing. And then if a word is just a word and anything goes, then why are there other words that you cannot use? To have an anti-gay slur with the F word, you know, these same structures would come down on you. If you have an anti-Semitic word out there, you know, the Jewish community will really come down heavy on you. If you have people who are all working within these realms of society, why would they even allow the N-word to go if they, you know, don't allow these other words to go? So it's kind of like saying, well, here's a time and place for everything, time and place for every word. But, you know, it's just the culture of the word brought into the mainstream by these artists and by the endorsed by these companies. Is something disturbing about that. And I just pretty much said when I talked about Hot 97's Summer Jam, that it was a sloppy fiasco. I thought it was sloppy the way that they did not host a show that kind of like boosted hip hop in a form that everybody could appreciate it from a balanced point of view.
I want to talk about radio. Do you think, I mean, just with the internet, is that it's so easy to get music. I mean, you know, it's so easy to, you know, I like to say it's the program director's dream job now is that they don't have to travel. They just have to do Google searches online.
Well, that's laziness.
Right.
I mean, I think the biggest problem I've had with rap music and hip hop ever since the early 80s was the curation of it. I've always had issues with the way that the music was curated. That's why with your show, like the Combat Jack show I did the other day, when does the rapper get the couch? You know, when does the rapper say something other than just spitting? You know, when do we hear something from the you know, the mind, body, and soul in the psyche of the MC or the songwriter or the DJ or the producer, which really kind of rounds out the art form. When do we hear that? When do we see that? Or does everything have to be like up in battle stage, you know, or its most coonery point of view or lowest hanging fruit? And I, you know, I love rap music and hip hop. This is my entertainment. It's got to be entertaining to me, just like the NBA finals. It just can't be like a whole bunch of quick glam and glitter stuff. And, you know we have aspects of that. It might even be a majority of the aspects, but I don't just think hip hop and rap's demographics, you know, is 23 and under, and everything needs to be, you know, at that bar.
Do you think, do we need to care about commercial radio anymore to play the rap music that we want to be played? I mean, just because you have the internet, you have all these people able to download or buy whatever.
Not all these people. You know, if you don't pay your internet service provider is in charge. You don't pay your ISP, right, you ain't getting internet. Nothing's like the free radio. The free radio, you could take a radio from 1949, put a battery in it or plug it up, and you could get the radio station because it's the free air. Right. If the free air is going to make a claim that this is the epitome, the home of hip hop, if this is the where hip hop lives, then the community, especially in New York, where it all started 40 years, should hold that signal accountable for what it claims to be. And it should claim a balance of not only representing the future, but also the present and the past equally from a building standpoint and curation wise. And it also should be able to spread out the floor to independents. It should spread out the floor to locals. It should pay attention to some of the global, the classics, the women in hip hop, the DJs. So what we do on Rap Station. So I just think that it's really important that a station group, corp plantation conglomerate, where a person sitting, you know, in Indiana doesn't have a final say so on what hip hop should be in the birthplace of New York. And where everybody around the world looks to New York as the mecca and the birthplace and upholds to those fundamentals, but New York doesn't. So I strike issue with that. New Orleans, they wouldn't accept anybody coming from the outside trying to dictate the bar for jazz. They wouldn't allow it for the blues in Memphis, and they don't allow it for the blues and electric blues in Chicago. So why would hip hop be any different to even justify this outside point of view of dictating what it should be just for commerce sake? It's on the free air. Citizens have a right to say what's predatory in their community, and that happens in the air too, as well as on the ground. And this is something I feel that it could drastically change. In Canada, they have a law that says that all Canadian playlists have to be 40% Canadian artists of the playlists. Well, in the United States, I feel that if radio wants to claim a genre, 33% at least should uphold local artists, independents. I mean, it's so twisted to the other side. You want to talk about Occupy Wall Street. There's an Occupy Free Air movement that was trying to instill through freedartists.com that shows the statistics that 99% of all the music that's played by these radio stations that call themselves urban, and urban means knock out the accountability and responsibility from the black faces and black community that the music is spawned. 99% on major label spins. 99% versus 1%. And the 1% of indie spins are three songs by Macklemore and Ryan Lewis, which is really not independent. It's backed by Atlantic. So what are you saying, and what are you doing, and what are you here for?
I think a great thing about when I grew up and, you know, heard you, Public Enemy, Kumo D, there was some of the rap music I gravitated to, some of it was similar to today, where it's about the kind of glorification of violence. But there was a great diversity in the content of radio that I was hearing from the radio stations that played it. Because I remember a time Z100 being, and I always say that Z100 was proud not to play rap music. They actually had a drop that said, no rap music here, or something like that. And now they play it all the time. So the big question is, why isn't there diversity in the content, especially when everyone I talk to, they don't listen to radio anymore because there's no diversity in the content?
Well, I don't think it's about who doesn't listen to radio. I think, you know, radio has the ability to capture millions at the same time. If a news situation came out where there was a catastrophe, people are going to turn on the radio, or they're going to turn on the TV. They might flock to the internet if they have that device, of course, right away, but they're going to try to get the full story from a bigger medium. I think when the bigger medium tells the full story of rap music, it should be balanced. And that's where we're at right now. It's a view that I feel very strongly about, that we can make the change as curators and people that provide services in rap music and hip hop. That's very important. The infrastructure has been lazy, really lazy. I mean, it's like people who want to be artists can be artists, but there's so few people that are equipped to be management agents, infrastructure areas, like how to set up your label, what to do with your career, how to perform on stage, how to take care of your public relations, how to be able to work together and understand that you're one of five instead of, you know, five and one. I mean, you know, these things have to be taught to you. That's why I, you know, kind of respect the sports world, because they really don't waste a lot of their time on fluff and what looks like an impossibility just because people don't understand that there's a standard to be met.
I was wondering, do you think what has happened to hip hop and even rap music kind of has been inevitable in terms of like what happens to 70s rock musicians, where it became more about the cult of the rock star and his lifestyle versus the rock and roll as in earlier?
Well, you know, understand rock and roll always had some sort of infrastructure. So you have always had more people around the art than who were doing the art. So they took it and led it into different places, and it was wildly successful for so many people that in the 70s, success was almost like spit on the ground and, you know, boom, rock god, you know? And a lot of that was combined in the area when drugs came in. So they made so much money that they all burnt themselves out from leading the music industry from a musical standpoint. The lawyers came in and had to fix it. The lawyers then assume the record company president positions, and it's never changed. I mean, the average record contract is now 50 some odd pages. Only lawyers could read it. It's a lawyer's game. And it smells like lawyers. It doesn't smell like music. So it was a beauty when musicians was running it. And that was reflected in the rock world. Ever since rap music had gone into the realm of major record companies in the mainstream, it's still been under a lawyer's shadow. I mean, the lawyers represent the artists, and then they represent the company, and then the lawyers assume the record company position when the record company is looking for a head. To me, that's just, it's so criminal, because that's what governs, you know, hip hop and rap music from that standpoint, not the art, not the music. So when they let something go or predicate something with the N word, there's not enough social and communities. Connection or accountability to even give a damn. And this has been harmful and one-sided, and this is something I want to try to infuse into the culture of bringing more of the faces and the names and the skilled people into it from service areas. It might be far-fetched, but I think it's necessary and not too late.
So I asked Buckshot this as well, but why do people keep flocking to major labels if it seems like, I mean, that Buckshot, tell me about that 360 deal, that 360 contract, wow, where it seems like people are constantly getting screwed over. Why do people continue to do the mainstream or the major label thing?
Because it's the Wizard of Oz. It's the yellow brick road, and, you know, you're coming from Kansas and, you know, in a tornado, and everything is just stark black and white. And then, you know, you've seen so many pictures that had it in Technicolor and riches and all these other things. And it's a banking system. So people want to be able to figure out, yeah, this is where the thing is at. This is where the event is at. This is where the party is at. They say not to go. Something might break loose, but it ain't going to break loose on me. So I'm going to do it as opposed to not doing it. Because where I'm sitting right now, I don't even understand it. And I don't understand how I can make it. And so that they're always going to dangle that. And my thing is that you're not going to stop that dangling from being attractive.
Right.
But you have to make other areas attractive and also livable and doable. And those are some of the areas that we try to point at how to build your own scenario, your independent digital label, how to look at the world of hip hop as the world of hip hop, not based on any region, how to make your region stronger and accountable, how you can actually do some things that are 360 yourself around your creativity that provide you the beginning to a professional career. These things are important. In sports, they do it. In music, it's been hollow and gutted out. So there's such a big difference. We're talking about maybe the demographic of the same young cat, the 16-year-old who's 7 feet, that's looking at a college. Everybody's talking about him because of the infrastructure that discovered him when he was 11 years old, when he was 6'4", in the fifth or fourth grade. Well, there's a young guy who's writing great songs, could play a little instrument, could spit. You know, their only resolve is YouTube, which is a great beginning. But who's checking out, 2,000 artists on YouTube?
Right.
It should be like, yeah, well, there's a research team that has 500 people checking out 2,000 to 5,000 artists on YouTube thoroughly. And those that like, get a call and maybe some, mentorship. There's been sort of like attempts like in the past, like with a direct artist and stuff like that, where people wanted to put together farm teams. But it takes a large infrastructure of a lot of contributors. A lot of people feel that being in a service mode is taxing, weary, and a big waste of time. No glamour. And it would just, like I said, take a lot out of a person. So that hasn't really been sold to people as much as the glamour of get on the star, have Jay-Z collab on your record, and you go to a gig, via helicopter, land right in the middle of, 60,000 people. So that's easy to sell.
I want to turn to kind of musical influences. And obviously, musical influences has changed over time. I think you were one of the first people I've heard talk about the Specials, but you grew up at a time where like those were your influences, like James Brown and the Specials. And
the Specials came when I was grown. When I grew up, I'm born in 1960, along with Keith in 62, Hank in 58, Flavor in 59, Griff in 60. Probably, so we were in that range. So we grew up in New York in the 60s and 70s, from 0 to 15. So influences in this city was WABC, AM pop radio that played everything, well balanced, great jocks. I mean, the Beatles were broken on WABC and MCA. They played James Brown and the Spinners as much as they played Steely Dan and Meatloaf later on, and the Beatles and Led Zeppelin. So, it was like top 40 radio, but really kind of like at a heyday of those particular soul and rock records and ballads and power ballads. It was great radio. Then we wanted to get into the all black thing. WWRL was in the city and was a soul station, and the DJs were great and the music was great and the beginnings of funk was there. So the DJs and radio was everything to us, and is everything in the black community, because the DJs connected and they talked to people, and it was just very, very real. So our influences are vast. I mean, I got four libraries of books, and I got every DVD known to man in popular music past 1950. So, I mean, I'm a musicologist along with my guy. So this is our World Series. This is our, NBA playoffs, studying and enjoying our music. Sly Stone, James Brown, Miriam Makeba, Nina Simone, Aretha Franklin, Ike and Tina Turner. I mean, it's not really who's on the list. It's who's not on the list is probably a better apropos question. Because when you talk about us, we're musicologists, and that starts from DJ culture. And the Holy Trinity plus one or two from hip hop culture is Afrika Bambaataa, Kool Herc, Grandmaster Flash, DJ Hollywood, Eddie Chiba. Afrika Bambaataa is considered the master of records. All this coming from records, and those are where your heroes are.
Do you think, like, so today's rap artists, their influences are rappers.
Right.
Do you think that has been hurtful or helpful to the culture itself? I mean, do you think, because people aren't going back to the, you know, they're not, a lot of rappers don't go back to the 1970s to listen to music then. They listen to whatever, Macklemore or, you know, Lil Wayne or whoever's on the radio, because that's, so do you think overall the fact that rap music, some rap music is pop music, this has overall helped the culture or has overall hurt the culture?
Not knowing your history hurts you, period. And not knowing the history of something that you say you dig and do and love really would hurt you, because you have to learn everything that existed in order to make something that has never happened yet, or something that people would think is new, but you understand what it was to make brand new. You know, I mean, if you know what was, then you know to make some adaptations into something to an audience that's naive, then automatically, by default, you'll have something that's considered new. I think when Kanye West some years ago did, had the Ray Charles record, you know, and hey, you know, it was something that was connecting to the past that people later found out, like, oh, that's Ray Charles. And then he had a movie with it. And then the song that he did, like with Jamie Foxx, was just like really pertinent and on point. And it was like a drawback, but also something pushing into the future.
Public Enemy's debut album, Yo Bum Rush the Show, came out in 1987. Your last album, The Evil Empire of Everything, came out in 2012. And you guys are obviously still touring. Did you figure that back in 1987 that you would still be around 27 years later doing this? Or was there a backup plan if PE failed?
No, it wasn't a backup plan if it failed, because we knew that it probably wouldn't fail with the sum of all our parts. And understand this. I was one of the first people who were heavily recruited. Rick Rubin would call my house for almost a year and a half, call the same house, and I'm like, nah, we cannot do a record. We wanted to do syndicated radio. We wanted to do what we're doing on Rap Station in 1984. And what people said, we're crazy, we're out of our mind, the genre's not going to last. And some of the guys that pulled me in, two of the groups that are in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, the Beastie Boys and Run DMC, swept me in into Def Jam along with Bill Stefani and Andre Brown, Dr. Dre, who later was known for MTV Raps as well. And they dragged me into Def Jam, so we knew Yo Bum Rush the Show, that we would have to do it from a sum of many parts, a posse, really one of the first posses that come in and bum rush the show. So we knew that our things that we were shooting for, we wasn't shooting to be better than Run DMC. We wasn't shooting to be better than Grandmaster Flash and Furious Five. We were shooting for the respect and the legitimacy as much as the people gave the Rolling Stones. That's what we were shooting for. Not us, but more like, you know, all of us type of point of view.
The 20th anniversary of Music and Our Message is coming August 23rd. When released, it received negative reviews. Mm-hmm. But that's even something you comment on in the intro, first track, that you said, we're going to receive negative reviews. So looking back at that album, would you have changed it, anything about it, to get more positive reviews? Or are you just kind of happy with what you did?
Oh, the thing about Public Enemy is that we've always relished in going the other way. We intentionally made something so it could get negative reviews. The only other weird, well, there's a bunch of weird people who called our allies from our time, our contemporaries, I should say, De La Soul. They all twisted and they would do some crazy like that, Prince Paul, along with my guys, Paz, Mason, True Goy, and Cool Keith and Ultra Magnet. It, you know, it was, you know, just totally like, I mean, even when we produced America's Most Wanted with Ice Cube, he had a record called F You Ice Cube. It was like, who makes a record just dissing himself? But later on, that became like, sort of like a theme of Eminem.
Right.
You know, and our whole thing was like, when we made that particular record, we made a record intentionally, not something that somebody would love. We always tried to make, I'll put it in quotes, hate music, meaning that we tried to make music that you would hate first, that would possibly see if it could find a road to take and consume you instead of you consume it.
Something I noticed about the music album that stood out to me is that you curse a lot in it. And I realized from the PE discography that you're very, very selective when you curse. I think like He Got Game, you didn't curse at all. Yo Bum Rush the Show, very limited, if any, cursing.
Yeah.
So when do you just, like, is that a conscious effort, or is when do you decide and not to curse or to curse?
I think it was the climate. So half of the cursing that was happening with my writing at that particular time was actually to draw some attention to something. And also we made a record so people wouldn't play it on the radio.
That explains a lot.
but I always tell artists many times, I say, when cursing is like, it's like chopping half your foot off
right.
if you want it to be heard. We were really didn't really okay. We may Give It Up. Give It Up was a song that everybody flocked to. One of the things with Music and Our Message is it was the album that was caught between label changes. Mm. I mean, distribution changes. Def Jam went from Sony into PolyGram. They sold. Def Jam was in the hole with Sony. We were in the black. We set our record up through Sony. Didn't set it up with Def Jam, with PolyGram. We never set our records up through Def Jam. But when we set our record up through Sony and Def Jam was going from Sony to PolyGram, then we were kind of lost in the crack as far as promoting and marketing that particular record. So therefore, we released Give It Up in April and everybody went on it and we had no record in the stores for 2 months. I mean, I couldn't be mad at any of the DJs. They played... They played it as much as anything we ever had, but you know, it's not going to be reflective. And then the album came out August 23rd when the album was supposed to come out in at the end of May.
Wow.
So it was like, you know, and the only reason that happened, like I said, it went Def Jam as a company went from Sony to PolyGram and had to change everything. They had to change their sales staff. They had to change everything. The barcode numbers. And here we are. We have a record that's already played. So, but after a while, you know, you got people that ask around for the record. They can't find it. They can't get it. I mean, they're on to the next one. Warren G. which went, you know, through the roof, you know, because everything was set up on the PolyGram system with Warren G.
Right.
And it had the just the exposure and the muscle that we said that we couldn't say that we didn't have. We had it, but it came through the Sony system with no record.
Ah.
So that was very unique about Music and Our Message. And but at the time, it was the strongest international record for Def Jam and whoever they... strongest rap international record, period.
Why does it seem that international fans... It seems like there's a more of an appreciation for hip-hop artists overseas than there is here. Why is that the case? Like, why does it seem that international fans just flock to good music?
Well, Tim, you're a New Yorker. New York is big in our minds, but small.
Right.
The United States is smaller than you think.
Right.
Is LA and is New York to the rest of the world? And okay, you know, maybe they'll head not Chicago. Maybe in some aspects. You know, some of the stuff in the South and Texas, but really it's LA and New York. That's it. And although we think, okay, you know, wow, you know, how come you just didn't do it here? Because it's LA and New York.
Yeah.
And LA and New York, but there's London, there's Paris, there's every single country that you deal with two or, you know, one or two major cities, just like the United States. Mm. It's just the fact that there's 55 cities in the United States. But really, if you had to say, well, there's a 1, 2, 3, 4, you got New York and LA, and not too many people are counting Chicago, especially culturally, I should say. They're not counting DC. They're like, okay, you know, just say when you go to Brazil, it's Rio and Sao Paulo. But how are you counting Brasilia, which is the capital? Or when you talk about Australia, there's, you know, there's Sydney and Melbourne. But are you counting Perth? Are you counting, you know, Canberra, which is the capital? This is that's foreign to the average American. Or I should say USA-er. The USA-er would know one or two cities. So when it comes down, why would somebody go overseas? Because the world is bigger than the country by far. And so they're going to many countries and many major cities as opposed to, you know, the third or fourth city inside of a country, which is the United States. So trust me, London, somebody's going to go to London, because London is just as big, if not bigger, than New York culturally, because it goes across the world. And then, you know, you got Manchester, which ranks number two in the UK. And then you got what? Then you got the other British Isles, which is like, you know, Glasgow, which is in Scotland, and Dublin, which is in Ireland. So when obviously when somebody goes somewhere else in the world, overseas means over seven seas, right. You know. But most people in the United States, and notice I didn't say America, because America, you have to talk about South, right. North, and Central America. But USA is, seem to dominate it so much that we don't even want to include Canada. So, which is Toronto. When you talk about Toronto, Canada is Toronto and Vancouver. And, you know, Montreal used to be up in that top two, but now it's Vancouver. So that pretty much explains it. And you don't hear that explanation when people say, oh, man, why go over there? Because in all those other major areas around the world, which is a bigger place, they're going to pay attention to maybe the fundamentals of something than before they take it on. And the fundamentals of hip-hop, you know, come out of New York. Right. And they started to emerge out of L.A. because there was a film scene that had a recording industry on its hip. See, the recording industry did not just emerge on its own. The recording industry came as a second fiddle to the film industry. The recording industry in New York came as a bunch of, you know, top fiddles and second fiddles out of the theater district, you know, all that. So the films were L.A., the theater was New York, and television. So therefore, the record companies had something to build around. I mean, independently, you know, you had Detroit that said, we have to, you know, Berry Gordy said, I got to build Motown because nobody cares about me. I could go to Chicago and do a deal with Leonard Chess, but these were independents that built something from nothing. And that's why they're famed and glorious today, King Records in Cincinnati. But when you're talking about the scene, the major scene of marketing and promotion, these artists will continue to look elsewhere in the world because the world is simply bigger.
I want to. You talk about touring a lot, and I was wondering, has your writing process changed? You seem to travel a lot, and to touring, speaking engagement, etc. So for you, when is the best time for you to write, and what's your best writing environment?
Well, the best time to write is whenever you can write. Make sure you always have a pen on you or some kind of apparatus or gadget, because a title can come from anywhere. A title that popped up in my head, I don't know if it came through Twitter, which is a great resource for writing, I think. It's 140 characters. People sometimes do their best in short bursts. You can take two or three tweets and actually put it together. You might be able to take something that you were thinking and put it in a tweet, and it might truncate for you. It might be a great title. It might be a great punchline or whatever. So it's a great thing for especially MCs, because they travel like 140 mile per hour fastballs, if they're correct. But, you know, always figure out how do you document and record the juxtaposition of words. That are kind of relevant to what you might be seeing and what you might be hearing in your presence, and being able to capture that. And that's the beginning of the writing process for me. Titles to me, like a picture could be a thousand words. To me, a title can give you at least 100. For example, the other day, I don't know if I don't even know if I read this or somebody came up with it, but it sparked me to come up with it, although I didn't finish reading it. So I don't know if the idea came from somewhere else or did it come from half me or half of myself, I should say. It's like, those who know who. So you got those, which is the letter that kind of introduces who know who. So it's like, wow, but it says it all. And the other day I came up with something that says, well, when somebody asked me like the redundant question, like, what's the difference in the state of hip hop now and back then? And I'm like, back then, like what, you know? Yeah. I said, well, one big problem when it went from indie to corp to local to corporation to mainstream, one thing that happened, we went from we to me. So I said, that's six characters. you know, W E T O M E. Now, you can look at that and it could say a lot if you happen to be a little bit clairvoyant or whatever, but or intrusive into the actual text that you see or characters that you see, but it says a lot. We went from we to me. We went from groups to individuals. We went from relying on each other and into something that maybe we relied on one person, into a lawyer and what we wanted, you know, to feed us ego-wise. I mean, yeah. So that's how the writing process starts for me. But reading great writers from Bob Dylan to Bob Marley, Bob Womack, you know, I mean, Smokey Robinson, I mean, a lot of things start out off as a spark of idea. Now, if you can actually tumble something from the spark of idea, you got something.
One song from The Empire of Everything, I think I literally played like 20 times in a row. Mm-hmm. The song Everything.
Okay. Right. Have you seen the video?
Yeah. No, yeah, I showed it to everyone. And everyone thinks the video is amazing as well. Where did that idea come from? And I mean, it's perfect. I've been trying to figure out who you kind of remind me of, sound of, but I like, it's kind of very gospel-y in a way. Great message. Just, yeah, where did it come from?
The song Everything came from being inspired by Otis Redding. Remember all the Otis thing was going on with, yeah, Kanye and Jay-Z? I just said, well, if you really want to capture the essence of Otis Redding in a different realm, here's a try. And I think it was a Lover's Prayer, one of those Otis Redding songs where he just let out deep within what he thought.
Right.
And that was some of the initial ideas. Now, I can't do Otis Redding. I'm not a singer. But myself and Gary G. Wiz said, look, how can we actually take the essence of what he did and convey it into a rap song and then say something that means something without a lot of words? I mean, I think the battle for me at this point is, what can I say and do that I haven't done before that could stretch the envelope for the possibility of somebody else coming and just really nailing certain aspects? You know, hearing your interview with Pharrell Monch, I mean, to me, he's a dude that is able to take a seed and grow it into a forest. You know, I mean, we have some incredible, no big pun intended, wordsmiths today. I mean, there's some incredible MCs and rappers today. I like to see more groups. I think what the idea of Kendrick Lamar's and Black Hippie, I just thought, is a concept I would love to go support and buy before it even comes out. But, you know, the group collaborations are far and few. Maybe I'd like to see a return to that for my own entertainment pleasure. I want to hear a lot of different voices. And I think that might come in the realm of a lot of women MCs and females and hip hop. I think that change might come in that realm instead of me waiting for the guys. So I like to be entertained. And when I'm going to make and record a record, I like to also do something that is not meant. It's not really meant to thrill somebody right away. Everything was a collaboration by Sheila Brody, who used to sing with George Clinton as the Brides of Funkenstein, I should say. And she's an artist on our record label roster. And then also the sax by the great Gerald Albright, who I would run into in the airport. And then we say, let's do something. And boom. And then my man C-Doc, who's our, you know, production manager, partner of his own film company, shot the video using everybody else's voices in it. We felt that was kind of like I don't know if Pharrell and his people ever saw Everything, but immediately the record, you know, caught wildfire. And to me, I think promotion and marketing for Public Enemy and things that we do, we like to look at long tail. So we don't like to try to look like, okay, let's flood everybody with this video so everybody can see it on this day because we're marketing this and trying to get its coin. I think we can always market in bursts. Like, okay, by the way, here's everything. And not use the word market or branded, which I don't like. But, you know, like every Christmas, you know, you start to hear the Christmas song by Nat King Cole. I think digital marketing can actually work like that, where it just kind of like organically oozes and morphs into the public, and it falls back on its own, and people organically pick it up one by one on discovery. And I think we just have to take the thirst and the rush out of it, and just kind of enjoy the process too, which doesn't necessarily make everybody happy based on their wallet conditions. They kind of like, yo, I did this, it cost me this, it got to work now. So, right. But that's how the old business worked. And that's why it all collapsed, because everybody kind of went into the mountain and kind of like, you know, like when they go into the mountain and then they gut it out of all its resources, right. You know, strip mining. That's kind of happened in the music business. It was culturally strip mined. So you go into it and say, wow, can we really build anything? Can we build anything off of this hill that was once so plentiful and fruitful, and everybody, yeah, it did bear fruit, you know, on season, but people just found ways to try to, you know, get it all and the roots and everything off. So therefore, I don't know if it's even, yeah, you know, it's almost like a useless hump now. They've done the same thing with the record industry. Music industry is healthy. Record industry has gutted itself out and has to replenish. And it's replenishing, I think, is in the digital realm, which is a long tail.
Do you have a top five favorite Public Enemy songs?
You know, that's one of the reasons on Rap Station we have, you know, Enemy Radio, which plays all. And it's the only time I kind of like listen to Public Enemy songs. I mean, because I'm not like, I listen to Enemy Radio because it's programmed and it sounds like something I could listen to and I'm familiar with. But I wouldn't necessarily sit down. I'm taking along. Let me put it in. It takes a nation of millions to hold us back. I do that maybe once every 3 years. And like, I took a long drive and I heard It Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back. For like the, you know, first time, I was like, well, you know, this is a pretty good album, you know. So I mean, I usually listen to a Public Enemy album to death before it comes out, and once it comes out, I'm like, okay, I'm done with it. I'm on to the next one, you know. But I listen to Enemy Radio on Rap Station when I want to listen to Public Enemy songs. If I had to say one song typifies my 100% attitude at the particular time from deep inside, is Welcome to the Terror Dome. Oh, nice. Yeah, I mean, it's just things that are, you know, inseparable from me. It's like Bring the Noise, Don't Believe the Hype, you know, Harder Than You Think, which became our biggest record ever, which is crazy to say. It, you know, Harder Than You Think became a bigger record, you know, as far as a single than Fight the Power.
Right. Yeah. Wow.
It's crazy, right? And that's 2012. Became a theme of the Paralympic Games, and from that it just took on proportions that you wouldn't believe. It became like a world theme. Now that, you know, and just in 2014, the Major League Baseball is using it. Now NFL has picked it up. It's crazy, man. It's been in four movies. The record is just like, it's like it refuses to die. It's like Bring the Noise.
That's like a shock. I mean, that's a surprise for you
Well, we recorded the record in 2007. And it was the themes. It was the major song released on How You Sell Soul to the Soulless People has stole that sold their soul, and it did pretty well for what it was and what that album was. It was a theme, and we used it. We loved to play it in the show because it dealt with different nuances, a reminder with Flavor kind of repeats his Public Enemy number one. So it was our 20th year anniversary song, and a television producer picked it up as being the theme and played it like to death on Channel 4. So here we are with our two records that signify Public Enemy. A, the Fight the Power being the theme and Do the Right Thing, just like relentlessly. Spike Lee put it in the movie like, like, you know, 12, 15 times and played it over. I'm like, who does that? Right. So that was and this television situation director put it in as the theme over in the UK endlessly, relentlessly. I mean, it would play like, you know, I mean, it became, as a matter of fact, that the year 2012 into 2013, when they played the songs and as they had fireworks exploded on New Year's Eve, yeah, Harder Than You Think was one of the main themes. It was crazy. It was surreal. And London has always been our base.
Right.
Yeah.
When do you know it's time for you to hang up the mic? What has to happen for you in order for your music mission to be, I guess, officially completed?
Well, my music mission is completed as far as, like, in 1992, I made it in my mind to not sell records again.
Oh,
I'm not selling a record. I got to a point where I would be really seriously the record company's worst nightmare. I make records. I'll be making records in perpetuity, man. I'm gonna sound strong and good, unless something happens to my voice and throat. That's my strongest attribute, and I could add some sense to it, so I sound good. But in 1992, around Greatest Misses, I just said, you know, it's stupid to ask somebody to go buy my record when they bought a record from me before. It's a, you know what I'm saying? All right, I'm making new records, so why I got to keep going to the public? Like, try this one. I was like, it's totally got to be up to them. It can't be up to me. And then I made up in my mind, you know, after our 25th year, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, I said, I just got to make sure my contribution to hip hop is all service. Mm-hmm. We built Rap Station, and our thing is all about service. Your show is about service. Yeah, it's about getting people who work with us to be able to make them have a profession, to be able to feed their families better. But as for me concerned, I'll figure that out. But my thing is, I got to provide service, and to be able to serve the classic artists, like with Hip Hop Gods and what Flatline is doing. So when you got artists like OC or Elder Sensei or LA Sunshine, being able to know that they got, you know, some kind of burn on what they say, they got the couch, or what the interviews that you're able to give people, to give them a voice where it seems like no one would want to talk to them, even if they got something out that trickles through whatever wants to play them and support them. Women, it's got to be more than Nicki Minaj. Come on now. It's like, it's wow. It's like, all right, Latifah has a TV show. MC Light's always doing something. But I mean, wow, you know, Jean Grey has a voice. Bahama D has a voice. You know, this Rhapsody can't be heard on Hot 97. There's a problem there. So women, classic, the DJs, for making sure that hip hop DJs could be just as lucrative for an event as, you know, EDM, which is a world that's in the stratosphere because they keep that world tight and together and structured great. You know, global MCs. There's more MCs in hip hop around the planet because they pay attention to the fundamentals.
Right.
They have different language, but they still got flow. They got the beat. They entertain. I was in Paris recently, and this group called A Social Club, four MCs put on the most incredible performance in this spot. I was checking them out in Paris that I've seen in a long time, and it was just four MCs. I didn't know a word they were saying. I don't know French like that. But it was incredible. And then we have Planet Earth, Planet Rap with Miko Kapanen and Mgawa Begeni, who do a fantastic job on curating all the different flows, dialects, languages, beats, and they try to put it in a form. And now they're 24-hour station too. So providing stations like, you know, She Radio, which is a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week station just for female MCs and DJs and producers and contributors. That's what makes me salute and be happy. And that's my service. And so the hanging up the mic means, you know, it's, if I had to compare it to baseball, I want to be that DH, you know, he's DH. And so he hits a couple of doubles, but I'm making songs to actually see if I could push envelopes to clear paths, you know, and I'm a rap fan. It's not like I'm going to go to the club and have some drinks and get it popping. So that's not my area of enjoyment. I don't really sit and watch the game anymore. I don't play poker or cards, you know. Yeah, I have a great time with my child, my adult children, my family and wife and everything. But, you know, my personal entertainment pleasure for me is checking out hip hop and rap music. I don't act in movies, although, you know, I'm known as being in a cult film or Anchorman on the cutting floor and all that. But I'm like, that's great. That's just not my scene and not my bag. This is my bag. This is my scene, and I dig it.
Frontman to Public Enemy and hip hop Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductee, legendary Chuck D. Thank you so much for taking the time to join me in the library with Tim Einenkel today on rapstation.com.
Tim, not only am I a big fan of yours now, but I've been a big fan since we go back to Air America.
Oh,
and the fact that you're able to bring a lot of that insight and bring it into the hip-hop world is my obligation to make this thing work.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, sir.
This is a journey.
Would you join me, please, in welcoming me?
Redeem a full of culture.
I got so much trouble on my mind. Refuse to lose. Here's your ticket. Here the drama get wicked. The clue to you to push the back, the black attack. So I sack and jab and slap the Mac. Now I'm ready to mic it. Hear my favoritism, Rolo. Never be a brother like me, go solo. Laser Anastasia Major. Ways to blaze your brain and train ya. The way I'm living, forgiving what I'm giving up. X on the flex, living now. I don't know about later. And for now, I know how to avoid the paranoid. Man, I've had it up to here. Yeah, I wear, got them going in fear. Rhetoric said and red just a bit ago. And not quick to go sign the hard rammer. With the key from getting jerked, changing some ways. The way back in the better days. Raw, metaphysically bold, never follow the code. Still drop the load. Never question what I am, God knows. Cause it's coming from the heart. What I got, better get some, get on up. Hustler of culture. Snake bitten, been spit in the face. But the rhymes keep fitting, respect's been given. How's your living? Now I can't protect. I paid off defects. Check the record and record. Inintentional wreck. Laid off in some intellect. Made the call, took the fall, broke the laws. Not my fault that they're falling off. Known as fair square throughout my years. So I growl at the living cow. Black to the bone, my home is your home. But welcome to the Terror Dome. Terror kicking off an era. For delivering pain, my 98 was 87 on the Ricky, yo. So now go Bronco. Crucifixion ain't no fiction. So-called chosen, frozen, apology made to whoever pleases. Still, he got me like Jesus. I'd rather sing, bring, think, reminisce. Found a brother while I'm in sync. Every brother ain't a brother. Cause a color just as well to be undercover. Backstab, grab the flag from the back of the lab. Told the rap, get off the rag. Sad to say, I got sold down the river. Still some quibble when I deliver. Never to say, I never knew or had a clue. Word was heard plus hard on the boulevard. Lies, scandalized in facing. Treats of hate who celebrate with Satan. I rope but dope the evil. We're righteous bombing and weaving. And let the good get even. Come on down. Well, welcome to the Terror Dome.
Come on down. Come on down.
Yo, beat
1990. And all that.
Holding the race against time. The pit in the pendulum. Check the rhythm and rhymes while I'm bending them. Snakes blowing up the lines of design. Run upon the science of sending them. How to fight the power. Cannot run and hide. Bullets shouldn't be suicide. In the game, a fool without the rules. Got a hell of a nerve to just criticize. Every brother ain't a brother. Cause a black hand squeezed a Malcolm X man. The shooting of Huey Newton. From the hand of a nigga pulled the trigger.
Come on, jam.
Blame somebody else. Will you destroy yourself? First, nothing worse than the mother's pain of a son slain and fist in her hand. wait for the state to sign the faith. So this jam I dedicate places with the racist faces. Sample one of many places. I speak on a lesson learned in Virginia. I don't smile in a line of fire, go wild. But it's on bass and drums, even violence. What you do, get your head ready. Instead of getting physically sweaty, when I get mad, I put it down on a pad. Give you something that you never had. Controlling, fear of high rolling. God bless your soul and keep living. Never allow kicking it loud, dropping a bomb, brain game, intellectual being. I move as a team, never move alone. Well, welcome to the Terror Dome.
Come on. Yo, look at you now. You ain't want to listen to me. Now look at you. Dilly doo doo. Wow.
Are you a Henry? It stands for high earner, not rich yet. It means that despite earning a six-figure income, you're struggling to amass any meaningful nest egg. Our friends at The Motley Fool can help. Since 1993, they've been providing investment advice, helping members build the financial future they envision. To kickstart your 2021 financial goals, they're offering five of their favorite stock picks for free. Realizing you're a Henry? Remember the not rich yet part. You can do it, and The Motley Fool can help. Visit fool.com/best bets.
The Shaboy Show podcast.
It's crazy.
Shaboy Show.
Our listener Chepe confessed how much he misses los nightclub, especially los de banda.
And he shared with us how he likes to dress.
My boots, my hat, mi cinto piteado.
¿Y la camioneta qué onda, güey? ¿Quema o no quema, qué?
Ahorita tengo un Kia, güey.
Listen to Shaboy Show on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.